Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC political reporter Bridget Bergen was up really late with the New York City Council, but is bright-eyed nonetheless to tell us what they wrought in the middle of the night that will change policing in the city. And she has the latest in the mayoral race to boot. Hey, Bridget.
Good morning.
Council passed two bills at what time?
I'm going to say it was about 2:30 in the morning.
So you are a trooper to get up and do this show. Both of these bills were inspired by the backlash against stop and frisk, one to create an inspector general for the NYPD, the other to crack down on racial profiling. Tell us about that one. Isn't racial profiling already illegal?
It is. The difference with this bill is it expands the classifications that are covered. It adds age, LGBTQ, religion, and it allows individuals who – it actually changes it to being called bias profiling, and it allows individuals who perceive that the stop is biased to file a complaint, therefore sue the police department and the officers.
Mayor Bloomberg says he'll veto both bills. He calls them a matter of life and death. And I saw that the profiling one had a slimmer margin of victory, still probably enough to override a veto, but close. Why was there less consensus on the profiling bill than the Inspector General bill?
Well, just to pick up for a second on the Mayor Bloomberg and Ray Kelly point, I was at that press conference on Monday, which was, you know, it was at One Police Plaza. You had Mayor Bloomberg at the center, and then the head of every major police union, in addition to Ray Kelly, talking about all the different ways these bills would hurt the department. Kelly going even so far as to say that Al-Qaeda wannabes, you know, take heart, that this could, in essence, increase the threat of terrorism. I mean, it was a really stark statement. In terms of the passage last night, the key number here is 34. That's the veto-proof majority. Both bills passed by 34.
But exactly 34 in the case of the profiling bill.
Exactly.
And 40, if I've got my numbers right, in
That's
the case
right.
of the IG.
That's right. And in the case of the profiling bill, among the 17 who opposed it, Council Speaker Christine Quinn, she referenced the federal stop and frisk trial, said that this was sort of an ongoing matter that was still being evaluated by the federal courts, and said
there's a court case right now in which the constitutionality of stop and frisk, the basic constitutionality of it, is being questioned.
Exactly. And at this point, what she said is, you know, she just questioned the timing of the bill. She didn't think it would cause all the problems that, you know, were suggested by the mayor and the police commissioner. But she thought that it might be too much judicial oversight at this point when this other larger decision was still being weighed.
So take me back to the mayor's statement and Commissioner Kelly's statement and why all the police unions feel so strongly about this. If they're going to call this a matter of life and death and maybe even terrorist attack, how would that happen? Do they lay it out? How would good police officers stop catching bad guys under these laws, according to them?
You know, it was the same argument that was made by other opponents of the bill last night. In essence, what they're saying is even the most seasoned police officer may be in a situation that they feel could, you know, put them in jeopardy, depending on how they describe a particular suspect, the idea that they couldn't use these certain terms over the radio to identify someone who was a suspect in a particular incident. And therefore, even if they might in their gut think that something needs to be addressed, they might pull back and they might not address or follow up with an incident or an individual that they think needs to be stopped, questioned, and potentially frisked.
The inspector general would be appointed by and report to the mayor. I asked Speaker Quinn on the show 2 weeks ago, what does this do to the chain of command? Does the police commissioner know who he's reporting to?
I fail to understand why anyone wouldn't want more suggestions. And the chain of command argument, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but it's ridiculous. These are going to be suggestions from the inspector general to the mayor.
Who appoints the IG? Would it be you? It's an independent monitor.
It would be appointed by the mayor in the Department of Investigation.
So how independent is that?
Well, you have to have it appointed in government, right? So the mayor has to be the person who appoints that, but they're not going to report to the police commissioner, and they're going to have subpoena power.
So Speaker Quinn here 2 weeks ago trying to thread the needle in a certain way. I mean, I still have questions about how independent an inspector general is if the person is appointed by the mayor. The mayor is also in charge of the police department. Quinn herself made it very clear the other day that if Ray Kelly, who she would like to retain, doesn't change the stop and frisk policy, she would fire him.
Exactly.
She's also in charge of the IG. So ultimately, the buck stops at the mayor's office.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, that was one of the complaints of opponents of the bill who said, you know, you are building this empirical mayor, someone who has so much power and in sort of undercutting the role of the council itself. The council can already call for investigations through the Department of Investigations. Is there a specific position needed for this? You know, that some people would say no.
WNYC's Bridget Bergen, she was up till the middle of the night, and then some, I'm sure, writing her pieces with the New York City Council, which voted around 2:30 in the morning on these two police bills. Listeners, want to weigh in, or do you have any questions that Bridget can clear up? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post them to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And in the context of the mayoral race, Bridget, here's an important part of this story, I think. City Council Speaker Quinn running in this now tight race for mayor, as we know from the latest polls this week, and we'll talk about those too. She voted against the profiling bill, but only after using a parliamentary maneuver that had never been used before to make sure the bill would pass. I'm going to say that again because I'm sure it confused people who just heard it for the first time. Are you going to correct that telling of it?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that I think is – it's a perception of how this particular piece of pieces of legislation went through this so-called motion to discharge. So to put these bills before the full council without going through a committee vote. Her staff likes to make it very clear that – Councilmember Peter Vallone is chair of the Public Safety Committee. He opted not to have these bills voted on before the Public Safety Committee. And so then it was council members, in this case, you know, Councilmember Jumaane Williams, with the support of several other council members, who made this motion to discharge these bills at the council meeting on Monday. And that's how they were able to vote on them last night.
Discharge, meaning getting them out of committee without the committee voting.
Exactly. And so, you know,
and Quinn's role in that?
In essence, you know, there was a little bit of, you know, raising the hand and saying, hey, well, you know, this is what the members want. That when
could she have stopped it and said, that's not the procedure that we use around here?
It is a parliamentary procedure. The last time it was threatened was around the paid sick leave deal. And there was just rumblings that if they didn't get a deal, that there would be a motion to discharge. And shortly thereafter, you know, you have Quinn standing on the steps of City Hall with, you know, Councilmember Gail Brewer, the bill's sponsor, and 32BJ announcing they've struck this deal.
Because that was another one that she was against in its original form.
Exactly.
But
and was going to be a big obstacle to her campaign if they didn't strike this deal.
And it was going to be a big public black eye to her if she opposed the bill and she's the speaker and it went through anyway. And would have made that an even more complicated issue for her in the mayoral race than it already was. So she struck that compromise.
Exactly. And so I think in the case of these bills, you know, it allowed for there to be a full council vote on an issue that, you know, she's thread the needle in terms of her support of. She supports the inspector general, not the profiling bill. And yet, you know, she didn't necessarily block it. She thought the bills should be voted on. But it shows we're also getting towards the end of how much strength she has as a speaker. We voted on the budget last night as well. So, you know, council members are showing that they can organize and they can push it. Well, it'll be interesting to see in the next council with new members if this is a procedure that a new speaker has to deal with more.
But still, the language on that I used, Quinn voted against the profiling bill, but only after pulling a never-before-used parliamentary maneuver, or maybe instead of pulling, allowing,
correct
it.
Exactly.
To make sure it would pass.
She knew that there was support. I will say last night
– they could have done it over her objection is really the distinction that you're making.
Exactly. They could have done it over her objection. And I think up until 2:30 last night, there wasn't complete certainty that at least the profiling bill was going to pass. You know, there was an opportunity for all 51 members to speak on all the bills. And I don't think even the sponsors knew if they had the full tally. They were keeping track and tweeting along with the rest of us.
And maybe legislative leaders should do that kind of thing more. You know, if a bill is popular enough to pass with a veto-proof majority, a speaker or a majority leader of any legislature shouldn't unilaterally be able to kill it. So maybe it's an act of democracy.
Maybe it's a sign of the times. Maybe it shows what the new council will look like under a new speaker.
WNYC's Bridget Bergen, who was up with the council as they passed these bills at 2:30 in the morning. And did they pass them at 2:30 in the morning to hide from the sunlight or for some more benign coincidental reason?
The benign reason that was given to me was that they wanted to pass the budget with two full business days for the office of the mayor's office and the comptroller's office to be able to review and authorize, basically to meet the fiscal year deadline to have all of their ducks in a row before
June
30th.
Which is the end of the week, June 30th.
Right. And so that on July 1, they can start, you know, with a fully formed, fully approved new budget for next year.
You buying that?
You know, there was a large showing of people who supported those police bills at the council chambers last night. Would there have been even more if this was at, you know, 2:30 in the afternoon instead of 2:30 in the morning? Yeah, probably. But they didn't lack for, you know, witnesses to their actions. So and certainly it was the press corps was there in full. I was not sitting at that. I'm not the only tired reporter this morning. And there's full coverage of it. So I don't actually think that there was.
And maybe the old media news cycle doesn't matter so much anymore.
Exactly.
But it's not in this morning's papers because it was too late. And by the time the local TV news on the, you know, the traditional channel 247, et cetera, get to it at 6 o'clock tomorrow, it's going to be oldish. It's not going to be something that just happened in.
Certainly.
You know, in the last hour, and we're going to go live to our reporter on the scene.
But it is online everywhere. And so people who consume their news online will be reading it, have read it, who listen to us, that, you know, have heard about it. And I think you can't avoid talking about the fact that yesterday was a historic day for lots of other reasons that gave, you know, Council Speaker Christine Quinn other things to react to. You know, she had a press conference at 1 o'clock in the afternoon giving her, you know, personal and political reaction to the Supreme Court's decision on DOMA and the throw out of
as
Proposition
a gay married person.
And so, you know, I think she would have gotten more heat if they had canceled the meeting altogether because of that.
So the other news in the mayoral race this week is from two polls that confirm that Anthony Weiner is being taken seriously out there. But less reported, they also show that John Catsimatidis in the Republican primary is being taken seriously out there by somebody, and that Democratic hopeful Bill Thompson is also coming on strong. The Quinnipiac poll is the newer one, released yesterday. And it shows Quinn, Thompson, and Weiner basically in a three-way tie. The Marist poll out 2 days ago shows Weiner with a 5-point lead over Quinn, Thompson a pretty close third. Is that a change from past polls, Weiner, Quinn, Thompson, more or less neck and neck?
It is a slight change. And one of the things I think is important to distinguish about both the polls is the time frame they were taken. So that first poll, the Marist poll, started on June 17th and went through the course of last week. And then the Quinnipiac poll started on June 19th. So that was the Wednesday that Bill Thompson picked up that big U of T endorsement and then ran through June 25th. So I think some of the difference that you see in terms of Thompson's numbers being a little bit higher in the Quinnipiac poll might connect or correlate with the fact that he'd gotten this really big endorsement.
And I would say not just the UFT endorsement. Obviously, that's potentially 80,000 teachers who might go out and vote for him, or the percentage of that who actually live in New York and follow the union's recommendations. But there's also the police unions, and that's another 30,000 plus. And he got less reported, but for people who've been following the race closely, he got the endorsement of the various police unions who were out in force, as you said,
absolutely,
against these inspector general and racial profiling bills. Thompson says the racial profiling bill would divert city resources to legal bills. And also when he talks about stop and frisk, he talks about policy, but he makes a personal appeal about his black stepson, and he's black. So he didn't have to vote in city council last night. So I guess he hasn't had to take a very clear position. But here's the only black candidate in the race who has gotten the police union's endorsement and has kind of been in the middle on stop and frisk and the IG.
Particularly when it comes to the conversation of stop and frisk, when he's been asked about the issue at forums, he really takes – I mean, if you talk about threading a needle, it's – you know, he talks about a policy that needs to be curbed. He talks about respect for the individuals. He makes this personal appeal. And then he always stops short of making any more dramatic policy statement, which is interesting. The other thing with Thompson, you know, his favorability numbers are higher in these polls. People who know him, like him, but he also struggles with name recognition. And that
even
is
though
sort
he
of
was
in, exactly, he was
the nominee against Michael Bloomberg 4 years ago.
Exactly. And so that says something. You know, I went out and I was talking to voters about their reaction to the first poll earlier in the afternoon yesterday. And, you know, voters are aware that Anthony Weiner and Christine Quinn are running for mayor. They generally don't name anyone else. Someone said to me, oh, yeah, that guy who used to run the MTA, but I didn't get a name out of her. So, you know, it was an interesting sort of sense of how people are paying attention to the race.
Speaking of that guy who used to run the MTA, on the Republican side in the Marist poll, this former MTA chief and Giuliani deputy mayor, Joe Loda, leads with 28%. But look, there is Gristiti supermarket founder John Catsimatidis right there pretty much with 21%. He's not everyone's idea of qualified to run the city. Is his competitiveness a surprise?
Well, I have to say that I think there might be a sample size issue here. You know, you've got 1,400 people who were surveyed, 1,100 were registered voters. Of that, 123 were Republicans. And the margin of error among the Republicans was 8.8%. So, you know, and this is the first time they've asked the question again since February. So I'm not sure if it's as much people paying attention to or, you know, supporting John Catsimatidis over another candidate, or is it just in this small subset, you know, he's starting to sort of hit people's radar.
And Bridget, I'm going to give you this gift as a mayoral politics reporter that I found on the floor of my local subway station.
Oh, it looks like a flyer.
It's
and I do love a good flyer.
Very glossy flyer. He's the billionaire, self-funded billionaire in the race this year. The experience New York City needs to stay on track.
Interesting.
And what is it all? It is all an attack on how the MTA has been run. And he never mentions Joe Loda by name, but there you can report on this and its implications.
Oh, thank you.
And before you go, maybe the most amazing stat from the Marist poll, Weiner tied with Quinn among women.
I know. It's a very interesting stat. I again will refer to – there's nothing more interesting as a politics reporter than talking to voters. And I talked to a lot of women yesterday. I know this is a family show, Brian, but a woman said to me that she thought Anthony Weiner had the cojones to run for mayor, which make and whatever joke you want. But that, and she was very serious, and she thought she was excited about him as a candidate. And that is part of what you see. The intensity of support for him seems to be a little bit higher.
The cojones to run the city, and she's got the tweets to prove it. WNYC's Bridget Bergen, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, how the Supreme Court term just ended was very, very good to business interests. Stay with us.